Okay, let's get going again. Welcome, thank you for attending. Any leftover questions from last time? Anything that I didn't fully cover? No, there's a problem with these canes. They're always falling down.
They are.
Yeah. So the first thing I'd like to bring Tyler up, and he's going to talk about this initiative called Design for America.
All right. Hello. I'm from Design for America,
and it's a new student group on campus this year, and this is our first year.
It started at Northwestern,
and here's our mission statement. It's Design for America is a network of student-led studios creating local and social impact through interdisciplinary human-centered design. And so, as you can see from that, it's very much aligned with this course. And so a group of us from the organization are taking this class as our project. And so the format of the organization is that there's several project teams. And so like one is working on homelessness, one's working on food waste. And so then we're just doing assistive devices for people with disabilities. And so it's founded at Northwestern. And the person who founded Northwestern is affiliated with the Stanford D School. And so there's still a Stanford connection there. And so we use the design process. That's because it's as much about making things that impact, that have a positive impact, as learning the design process to define, discover, reframe, ideate, prototype, and implement. And so here are some of the projects they have made at other universities. They have Jerry the Bear, they found that children with diabetes, they have like long-term social or psychological issues because they associate the pain of sticking the needle, of their parents sticking them with needles, with like anger towards their parents, and so it helps them with empathy and other, so like they would stick Jerry the Bear with the needle, and so they would learn the process. And that project, that right there is a check. I want to say it's for like $25,000, so they're really going forward with that. Then those are some other projects that help with, the Right Angle helps with food waste, and BioBin, it was a simple project to help with sorting out compostable and trash. And the new project that's really going forward is called SwipeSense, and it's for doctors because they always have to wash, like contamination's a huge problem in the hospital. And so it's these rollers on your pants, and so doctors are always wiping their pants. Whenever they do, it disinfects their hand, and so they can do that. And so that's helping out, and that's really going well. So these are the schools that are, it's brand new, and so it's spreading slowly. And so Northwestern, Brown, University of Oregon, Columbia, Barnard, Dartmouth, Cornell, Stanford, UCLA, all have a DFA at their campuses right now, but it's spreading. They're recruiting new campuses each year. And so to get involved, there's a Facebook group, and then Ready to Commit. You can contact at, here's all the contact information if you're interested, designforamerica.com. It has a lot of information on the website, so if you're interested, just shoot an email.
Great. Thanks, Tyler. Any question?
So,
Or write it down. If you can.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Now in the end of class.
Any other questions for Tyler?
So were you the one who started it here?
Oh no, there are some upperclassmen who have started. I'm just one of the ones taking the course, and so that's something I have to do.
I should mention, if you want to participate in this and do another assistive technology project, I'll be glad to help you out.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to ask, who actually decides on what the projects are going to be for each of the schools?
It's very student-run. So, like, this past quarter, it was just the student groups. They had a common interest of, like, there was a health group. And so whoever was interested in health, they got together, searched out for a project, and worked on that together. So they're, like, and everyone, they're very eager because there's almost, like, a lack of projects with mentors for the organization. And so if there was someone who was willing to, like, help guide them, because, like, the resources still aren't completely there, like, with connections and, like, the hospitals to go and try things out. And so all of those, like, they're very, everyone's extremely enthusiastic and eager to work on these things. It's just still on the ground floor of getting those things.
Just getting started. Okay. Thank you, Tyler.
Thank you.
I should mention that Tyler mentioned one of the projects was with a competition called Diabetes Mine.
Yeah.
And I've actually put together an entire list of student design competitions that are on the course webpage. So if you're interested in maybe submitting your project for a student design competition, you know, that's a place to look. There's a number of them. One student group submitted their project and was one of the finalists and got a trip to Washington, D.C. to present their stuff, so could work out. So I'm going to do a few things today and then have Debbie talk about occupational therapy things. So a little bit more in regard to John's RAF project last year. I thought it would be good to show some pictures of what he did. And basically, he told me it's like a mastermind for math. So the idea is that you put these numbers together from on these blocks and figure out, you know, the, you know, what number it needs to be there and what operation needs to be there to make the equation correct. And there's two kids, one on each side of this barrier. So that's the way, that's what it is. Team formation. Everybody who's working on a team project has submitted their top three choices, and it looks like people are well on their way to forming teams. There is one team already, Sophia and Nick. Their team name is Transformations, and they'll be working on the low-cost transfer device with the Rota Mobility people. And so once you get your projects finalized, please let me know, you know, the name of the who's on the team and the name of the team. So that's this stuff. And later on, you can think about the name for the project and the name for the device that you're working on. And ideally, you should be sending that. You should have the teams formed by end of the day tomorrow. Let me know if you have any problems. Some of you might have to compromise if you can't find somebody else that's working on one of your top three preferences. Okay. And I should also mention that it's okay if you're working on a project and want to help somebody else on their project, but you know, you work on your project primarily, and if you want to give some assistance, volunteer to help somebody else out, that's okay. Individual projects. I've talked to talked to everybody who's going to be working on an individual project, and we have some great ideas for projects. So that's going along really well. If you have problems finding a person with a disability to talk to, get in touch with me and I can provide some contacts. Okay. Just a quick show of hands right now. How many people who are working on team or individual projects might want to use room 36? Okay. I think next Tuesday I'll have a sign-up list for room 36. We'll get you going with that. Okay. Here's the photo of the day. Okay, this is an elephant with a missing part of his leg from walking on a landmine. And we've heard of a lot of disabilities for people who walk on landmines, but it also affects animals as well. So it doesn't look like they're doing anything for this animal right now, but I guess there may be a calling for
prosthetic device for an elephant.
Yeah. Yeah. They use prosthetic devices for these elephants.
They do?
They need to.
They need, yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
The elephant standing.
Yeah. I mean, how many people have seen a dog with three legs?
Oh.
Yeah, yeah. So dogs can get around. And I have you seen a prosthetic leg for a dog yet?
I think I've heard of.
Yeah. I've seen the wheels.
The wheels.
So it's not just people that have disabilities, it's animals too. So I want to do one more thing from this who is disabled discussion. And as I mentioned before, I called who is disabled not to label people disabled or not disabled, but to facilitate this kind of discussion. So here's a real easy one. Who is disabled? Superman. He came to Earth with powers and abilities far beyond those of mortal men. I just remember that, you know, from my childhood. So what powers and abilities does Superman have? His what? Flying, right. That's a big one. What else? Strength, super strength. Okay. What else? X-ray vision. Wow. In a flash, he could run really fast too. And there's one other thing that I remembered about Superman that was really outstanding. From the movie, when he was flying around the Earth in the opposite direction to turn back time, who remembers that? I mean, that's a real super ability, right? So, would you call Superman abled or disabled? I mean, it's obvious answer. Yeah, I mean, compared to Superman, you know, he's the definition of somebody with superpowers.
He must have serious problems reading if he can see through things.
Well, I think.
Continually reading the pages.
Right. Well, I think he can control his X-ray vision. Okay. So. But the thing about it is that he had a privacy issue, you know, when he was, what was his name as a reporter? Clark Kent. And so he had a privacy issue because, you know, that was his secret identity that he wanted to keep private from everybody else. But, you know, it occurred to me in looking through the comics that it was only Superman and Clark Kent that had blue hair. So I don't know why it was so hard to determine, you know, that Clark Kent was Superman. Okay, Superman, not disabled. Superman with kryptonite totally changed the situation. What happens with Superman when he's near kryptonite? Who remembers from the comic book days? Nobody knows?
Most people are too young. Know what a comic book is.
Well, yeah, okay. Okay, some of the old folks then. Debbie, I bet you know.
Yeah, he becomes incredibly weak. You know, he can barely get up off the floor.
Right. He loses all his superpowers and he can't move at all. It's like he's totally incapacitated. So, to me, you know, being around kryptonite is like instant disability, right? But what happens if you take the kryptonite away? He's super again, right? So what's the point of this? The point is there are situations that can cause temporary impairments in even the most able-bodied individuals. So what are some examples of mild-mannered humans like us that we can draw from this analogy? What situation? Okay. Excuse me?
A broken bone.
A broken bone, yes. Break a leg. The flu. So you can be sick, but you recover pretty quickly. What else? pregnancy, okay.
Being like afraid or psychologically, I guess, disabled?
Yeah, as long as you can recover from that. I mean, the point with Superman is you can recover from that.
An eye injury that doesn't cause permanent
damage. So some injury that you can recover from, so, right. I was thinking of another one, two other ones, actually. Anybody else? If not, I'll tell you mine. How about allergies? I mean, allergies can be pretty disabling. I mean, you're fine one day and you're sneezing and the eyes are watering, and it can be pretty disabling.
Turn out the lights.
Yeah, that's the thing. So if you find yourself in a power outage, for example, I mean, you can't get around, right? One more thing that I thought of today, that's sort of self-induced. Multitasking, you may not be able to do, you know, everything the way you want to if you're doing too many things at one time. Okay. But here's what I was thinking of. If you're drinking and you get intoxicated, okay, you know, you're
disabled then.
Okay. So Tuesday we're going to have a doubleheader. We're going to have
Doug Schwant.
He is a mechanical engineer, graduate of Stanford. He worked with me at the VA for many years. Now he's a consultant. He designs all sorts of mechanical things, and he's probably somebody that you can look at as somebody who's gotten the Stanford mechanical engineering education and has been very successful after that. So he's going to give us some pointers and about things that helped him, you know, throughout his career that can be helpful to you as well.
In addition, we have Jacon. He's from this company called AlterG in Fremont,
and they make this very interesting device that provides buoyancy. So if you're walking on the treadmill, that's that as a part of their equipment, you don't have to support your entire weight. So that's helpful for people who have walking problems, recovering from hip surgery, recovering from a stroke, something like that,
to provide therapy. So he's going to be talking about his products.
And that product actually got started at the VA and was used at NASA by astronauts for their training as well. So
it should be really interesting. So today we'll have Debbie Kenny after a
short break. So see you in about 5 minutes. Please come up and sign the sheet if you haven't. Get a cookie. Oh, yeah, we can take all this stuff away.
Yeah, well, I think you need that, right?
Yeah, this we need. Oh. This, I don't think anybody's signing.
Before taking this away. And everybody's welcome to fill out an evaluation sheet for this lecture.
Go ahead and make your announcement. Well, in a few minutes, right before we start.
Where? Oh, there's the clicker. All right. Want to let him make his announcement?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead.
Announcement. Yeah, well, my name is Sean Randy. I'm a master's student here. I'm a co-ter in mechatronics. And I just thought for some of the teams that, you know, offer assistance if you needed to do design work, I did mechanical engineering and electrical engineering undergrad here. So I got some experience, you know, doing motors and actuators and kind of making stuff work, microprocessors, things like that. I do mechatronics for my co-term. So if you just need any help with coming up with ideas or seeing the possibility for, you know, electromechanical stuff, just let me know. I'll probably send out an email my contact info. Or just ask Dave about it, and then just case in hand.
So okay. Thank you, Sean.
Give us a second. All right. One second. Let people get settled.
Introduced?
Sure.
Okay. Debbie Kenny is an occupational therapist. She's been an OT for the last 17 years, splitting her time between Stanford and the VA, where she worked with me at the Rehab R&D Center. Well, we all work together, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. She collaborated on numerous design development research projects with both engineers and grad students. Her work has included testing and integrating technology into the rehabilitation setting with individuals with Parkinson's disease, stroke, spinal cord injury, hand therapy, and balance problems related to aging. She currently works with post-stroke survivors at REACH, where she coordinates a research project in Stanford's medical school. Oh, it's a comma there, not an and. She coordinates a research project in Stanford Medical School's Department of Hand Surgery and also is a frequent guest lecturer both of this course and the Multiple Sclerosis Society of Santa Clara. So let's welcome Debbie Kenny.
So this talk is really designed to help you to better understand the process that goes into prescribing an assistive device that fits the needs of the user rather than the other way around, and who all the players are in the process. And by knowing more about this, I hope you're going to broaden your scope of who you involve in your design when you take on your project. So you heard Dave call me an occupational therapist, and I don't think a lot of people know what an occupational therapist is. A lot of people believe that an occupational therapist has to do with just work. Well, it's a little bit more than just work. It's about getting people back to a balance in work, play, and self-care. So we assist people who, for whatever reason, from injury or from illness, have lost some abilities, or we want to prevent them from losing some abilities. We differ a lot from physical therapists in that we use functional activities rather than just exercise activities to do the same thing. So, for instance, if I was a PT and I wanted to work on this, the muscle that does this, okay? Now, this is a pectoralis major. And I can take a piece of TheraBand. I don't know if you've ever seen TheraBand. It's really stretchy stuff, and it goes up different resistances, and I can have you sit there and stretch TheraBand all day long. Now, I know that if I send a lot of you home with a piece of TheraBand, you aren't going to use it, all right? It's just human nature. It's not fun. It's boring, okay? But if I take something that's important in your life, for instance, when I had little kids, I loved to put them on swings. And I said to you, okay, you've got a little kid, so go put them in a swing and go ahead and swing them like this. You may be more motivated to work towards doing that exact same activity, using those exact same muscles and building the, you know, those muscles up the way that we want you to in a more fun and meaningful way to you. That's a really big difference. The whole rehab community tries to treat the whole person, but we come at it from very different perspectives depending on what our background is. So let's, I'm sure this has been gone over before, but I do want to go over it really briefly. What is assistive technology? Well, it's devices that can help you improve physical and mental functioning, overcome disorder and impairment, help prevent the worsening of a condition, right? Strengthen physical or mental weaknesses, help improve a person's capacity to learn, or even replace a missing limb, okay? In terms of rehabilitation goals, we want a person to be able to be discharged from the hospital. We want them to be as independent as possible when they're home performing their ADLs. ADL stands for, anybody know? Very good. All right, activities of daily living. And we're going to go over a little bit of activities of daily living and show you some adaptive devices here that have some importance in those. So, for instance, part of self-care in the morning is being able to dress yourself, right? So if you can't bend down to put on your shoes, what you going to do? Well, maybe you have a long-handled shoehorn. People who wear what's called AFOs, ankle foot orthosis, it's a device that helps to support the ankle. For people who, it's very common, we have two people wearing AFOs of different types in this classroom. For people with stroke, they need to wear an AFO because their foot would drop and drag, okay? But you can see that it has to go into the shoes. It's hard. This is not an easy task to learn how to do, but it's an important task. If you can't go home and put on your own shoes and your ankle rolls when you go to walk, you can't walk that way. And unless you have somebody else to help you put it on, you've got a problem. So we need to train you how to redo this. And then you've got here, this is a very, very simple device. You can see here, somebody's just attached a loop to some elastic pants. So if you didn't have hand function and you need to pull up your pants for doing hygiene, what you gonna do? Okay? So maybe you have elbows, but you don't have fingers that can grasp something. So you can hook. You can hook. Yeah, exactly. You can hook. You can also use a dressing stick. I didn't bring one. I did bring a reacher that could be used as a dressing stick, so you could hook it around. There's a little hook here, and then help pull up the pants. There's different ones of these, actually, that can be used without having a grip. Okay. So, mobility, big one. Usually in the area of PT, but not always. Some OTs do wheelchair prescriptions. So we have wheelchairs, we have walkers, we have canes, we have somebody who needs to who has vision problems, you can see, and they need to go on the stairs as well as mobility problems. And then we have somebody here who has a spinal cord injury and is wearing an entire exoskeleton. Okay. Eating and meal prep. So if you've only got one hand and you've got to cut something and you try to do this with just a regular cutting board and a regular knife, things are going to slide all over the place. Sachiko, you know this, and Ellen, you know this. So we have things like this. Very simple device. It can be made out of wood, too, with prongs in it. This part actually is interesting. Can anybody who isn't in the rehab field and who doesn't use one of these know what this part's for? Anybody want to guess as to what this part's for? What? Yeah, but what kind of food would you put up against it? Yeah, the bread. Yeah, you see it right there. So, just seeing you, you're paying attention. All right. So, yeah, this is for making your sandwiches. You got to spread your peanut butter on your bread. You got to have it held up against something. We have all these adaptive utensils here, built-up grips, or you could have something here like this, very simple device. Where you, again, don't need a grip. Maybe you've got elbow function, hand, but no hand function. You can bring it to your mouth. Okay. And we need something to push up against the plate, something like this, where if you just have a regular plate and you're pushing your food around and you don't have a fork and a knife to kind of scoop things up, you need to have something that it provides a barrier that you can do that. Yes, a scoop bowl. And then this is my favorite. This is my favorite one of the eating and meal prep devices. Oh, you like this one. Okay. So why do you think this is designed the way it is? Anybody?
Okay. Maybe it's easier to kind of be able to like use your whole arm to kind of tilt the knife rather than just using your wrist.
Okay. And it's again, it's a one-hand, it's a one-handed deal. That's the other clue. So yes, you brought one too. Okay. You'll get to show yours. This one looks far nastier than that one. When you're doing one-handed cutting, normally with cutting, you stabilize with your fork, right? And you cut with the other, we cut with the knife, and that keeps the food from moving around. Well, if you only have one hand, you can't do that. So by rocking, you stabilize your food. Okay. So there are all kinds of little devices that are out there to help with ADLs. Hygiene. We have somebody here, an amputee, W amputee, and this is a toothbrush. Somebody who needs to get in and out of the bath and who has mobility problems. This is a very common thing to see with older adults needing a raised toilet seat, just ease of getting up from a toilet. Some toilets can be really low, and it's really a problem, and you don't want people falling. Communication, not necessarily the area OT, but again, an area of rehabilitation that we have to consider when we're considering an entire person. So do they have writing problems but can speak? Do they have hearing problems? Do they have speaking problems? And they need an assistive device to help them speak. And we have to balance. It's not all taking care of yourself. Some parts of your life are about your leisure time, too. And just because a person has different abilities doesn't mean that they shouldn't enjoy leisure activities, too. And so here we have somebody that's on a ski device. Here's a reel that has a device that actually automatically reels in the line. And you can probably tell from the picture and where this is at what this might be. What might you use this for? Beach, yeah. And actually, some of the California beaches actually have some of these devices. Some of them are cheap and made out of PVC, but the big wheels allow it to move really easily upon the sand. We have this little boy here, and he's in his wheelchair, but he's still playing baseball. And then some people choose that they want to work, and some people need to continue with their education, and we need to also be able and aware to help them. So here we have a gentleman who's welding, and he's using a wheelchair that helps him to stand independently. Here we have a farmer with a tractor, and this is a lift for him to get into the tractor because, as you can see here, he's in a wheelchair. And this is somebody, maybe a student, who needs to use a mouse but doesn't have hands to use a mouse, high-level spinal cord injury, and she's using a sip and puff to move the mouse around on the computer. But I've just shown you a bunch of devices. But people don't, except for some very simple devices, they don't typically just go out and buy them. Especially when you're in the hospital, you're in a situation where you are overwhelmed with the newness of your injury or your illness. And it's a lot to take in, and you're not an expert in the field, and you need an expert to help you. So a doctor will make a prescription, and the prescription will say, for instance, I'll get a prescription for somebody, and it will say, please evaluate for ADLs and prescribe necessary equipment. And it's that general. So there's a person that exists in between the MD and the end user, and it could be any of these people that's on the transdisciplinary teams. We have computer engineers if you're using computer-driven environmental control devices. We have rehab counselors. We have people who make prosthetics. All those AFOs tend to be custom-made. We have people for hearing. We have our physical therapists, our occupational therapists. It's a lot of people involved. It's not just one person. So remember this, when you're doing your design, it's good to ask the end user about their experiences, but overall for general experiences, that's one person. People who have way more experience would be somebody from that transdisciplinary team. Now, you see this word here? Anybody seen this word before? Physiatrist?
Is that misspelled?
No. It's not a misspelling. No. That's a fancy name for a rehabilitation doctor, okay? A physiatrist.
Can I clarify one thing? If you have said that you're specifically calling this rehab equipment here, does this include if someone is where it may be an ongoing condition where it's not necessarily rehabilitating back to a
right. Well, as I said, it's just to be get somebody as independent as possible during that time to, if we can, to prevent further decline. But sometimes there is. In certain diseases, some like Parkinson's, for instance, we oftentimes see certain declines. And we have to reevaluate. But the goal is always to make people as independent as they can. The steps needed to issue an assistive device really quickly, just going from the prescription. We need to talk about equipment suitability, the site and method of instruction, time to introduce the device during hospitalization if they're in the hospital. It's really important. Reinforce its use. And we'll talk about these a little bit more in detail. And, of course, if we get insurance companies involved, we've got to write justification. We can't just say, oh, this guy needs a wheelchair. We have to say why he actually needs that wheelchair. So we take a look at a lot of different, when I'm thinking about a person, I'm not saying, okay, this person has had a total knee or this person's had a total hip done, and I'm going to give them X, Y, and Z because that's what this disability or this procedure should have. If I do that, what's going to happen is that half the equipment that I give to somebody is going to end up in their closet not being used. And that's because I haven't taken all of these factors into account. So we need to look at culture, for instance. One of the cultures that comes to mind is a traditional Filipino culture where you have a large extended family. So if my goal to get them out of the hospital is for them to be independent in dressing, I'm kind of going in the wrong direction. So if I give them a lot of equipment for independent dressing, that's not going to work. That's going to end up in the closet because traditionally their families take care of them and that's expected that their families will dress them. So you have to be really aware of that when that's why I said, if you talk to one end user, you get one perspective. And it really depends on all these different factors as to how and what's going to work for somebody. So what kind of support do you have at home? Is there somebody who will help and reinforce the process of training? What is that person's motivation? For instance, what is your perception of self? Do you appear disabled? Does that bother you if you appear disabled? So what kind of equipment I give you is going to affect how you view yourself and whether you will use that equipment or not. The age is important. Sometimes really high-tech devices work really well for really one set of people who may be younger and used to computers, but maybe you've got an older generation that hasn't been so used to computers. And if you know, some of them are open, some of them may not be open. Gender. Women tend to like devices that don't make them look very disabled. And so you see a lot of canes out there now, maybe in like Rite Aid or something like that, that are really fancy and done nicely. And that's to support this gender difference in adaptive devices. What kind of education? Do they have an elementary school level education? Do they have a college education? Again, that's going to depend what kind of equipment you're going to give them. Diagnosis is only, as I said, one little teeny part of it. What is their health status? We talked about that just there. You know, do we have somebody who has a chronic disease? Do we have somebody who has a changing disease? Is it acute? This is a big one. Cost. How much do you think this costs? Anybody want to guess? That's a good answer. Want to guess? Oh, that's a little high. Students, guess. Okay, getting closer. Yeah, so it depends. Around $20. Yeah, and this is pretty simple in terms of manufacturing costs. And in terms of parts, there's not much to it. There's a plastic handle, and there's a, you know, this foam bit on it. It probably costs less than a dollar to actually manufacture, but it costs a lot of money when you buy it. Things go up as you add levels of complexity.
What is the justification for the cost?
I don't want to address this too much, but some of it is because it depends on how many of a certain item that you're going to be issuing. So if you have wheelchairs and it's pretty specialized, price may be really, really high. It's kind of the difference between a Lotus and a VW Bug. Okay, yeah, it's sexy, and both of them work on the road, right? They both get you places, but one of them's got lots of bells and whistles, and it's really rare, right? You're not seeing a lot of Lotuses out there on the road, and so that it automatically increases the price. And there's some R&D stuff that goes into it. It's not necessarily mental capacity, though, that plays into it. I'm trying to think of a nice way of saying this. So some people who've only had an elementary education because they've, in their teenage years, got rotten and went the wrong way, and they don't consider education important, they view their world different than you view your world, okay? And so for them and how they view their disability and how they view adaptive equipment and what kind of living situation they're in this, which is this physical environment piece, you know, are you living in a city and are you living in, you know, a teeny tiny apartment? Are you living in a squat? Do you rent versus owning a property? All these are important factors, you know, in deciding what the suitability of a piece of equipment is. You could be homeless. It's not a simple process. And we've seen and we've all heard in the newspapers of homeless, disabled people losing their wheelchair when they've gone to sleep, and it's sad. And so would you give that person a lot of equipment? Probably not. Right.
Get a hearing aid, and unless you get it really, you know, you have to go back.
Right.
They can get it right, and you can, you know, in many, many cases, you can hear really well. But if it's not quite right, you don't hear at all, and you just kind of don't use it. And so I think.
And this is why, well, let me go a little further, and hopefully we'll address it. And if I don't, come back to me with it. Okay. I'm going to go on to a little bit about who pays, and this is kind of this addresses some of your question, and it's about who pays. What's Medicare willing to pay for versus somebody who's got a private insurance? That's a very different thing. For instance, versus VA. VA can be very good to its people about providing equipment. When you got Medicare, you have certain limitations that I have to deal with as an occupational therapist and physical therapist too. You would have to make a really strong case for the Cadillac of wheelchairs, or to get somebody an electric wheelchair when a manual wheelchair might do. And the same kind of thing goes with hearing aids. So, for instance, on Medicare, let's take somebody who needs a commode chair. That's a little toilet that might sit next to their bed, because in the middle of the night, going all the way to the bathroom is going to be too much. They're going to be at fall risk, so they may have a commode next to their bed. But I can't order a commode and a shower chair, which they also need to be able to shower. I can only order one, not both. So what do I do? Sometimes. You can make a good case, yeah. There are grants and loans that are available from people like the Elks. And so sometimes equipment can be gotten through that way, ramps up to houses. You know, you provide somebody with a wheelchair, but you have no ramp into their house, and there's three stairs up into their house. That's great. Yeah. So there's a lot of different factors that we need to look into, so and how we get the equipment. And unfortunately, cost is really important. If you don't have insurance, and we need both of these devices, what do you do? Well, sometimes one of the things that OTs are really, really good at is coming up with really inexpensive solutions to problems. For instance, for the bath bench or bath chair, and you saw it earlier, a picture of somebody getting into the bath with a little knee brace on. And you know, if you can't get that leg in or you need something for balance to help you in the bath, you need something like that. So what could you use instead of an expensive, when we're talking, I don't know, $60, $80, $100 or more bath bench, what could you use instead? Something cheap, something in the $15 to $20 range. Let's see if you guys can figure it out. Okay, that's good. I'm looking for something with a little bit more stability. That's
like a chair.
Uh-huh. What kind of chair? Want to stick one of these chairs in?
Chair.
Yep, exactly. Exactly. So sometimes we have to be creative in order to meet the needs of our clients. And this is about, as I said, this is it should be client-driven. When you pick a product and you design a product, pay attention. Go ahead.
Are there any liability issues when you're suggesting products that aren't the actual product that's typically used in
You can make suggestions, but because you're not prescribing them and actually buying them for the patient, the liability ends there. It becomes their liability once it's in their house. If I came into their house and I brought the chair and I put it in their bathtub, then that would be an issue. Yeah. So there's different levels of assistive technology that we've talked a little bit about, and I want to go a little bit more in depth on it. So we have things that are we call low technology adaptations. Fingerspelling, for instance, is an example of that. Velcro doesn't require a lot of training. It's really inexpensive, right? And then we have things like elementary technology devices. These are our basic walkers, wheelchairs, maybe some of our battery-operated devices. They're a little bit more expensive. You can get them off the shelf for the most part, but they require more training. Okay. And then we have our high-tech devices like our devices to the Sip and Puff was an example of an assistive device that you need to have a lot of training for. Electric wheelchairs. You can't just send somebody out with an electric wheelchair and expect that life's going to be good for everybody. It requires a certain degree of training in order to use them safely. So instruction is the key to these assistive devices once we give somebody an assistive device. Repetition, 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 and where and how we give that repetition is really important. Do we just demonstrate it? It's one way of doing it, but if I just demonstrate it to you and I don't have you do it, do I know that you know it? No. So we should practice it. Do we practice it in the home environment versus a hospital environment, or do we do it in both environments? Do I give you follow-up written instructions, maybe a video of yourself doing it? And again, as I said, in-home training. Reinforcement is really key, again, to having adaptive devices, especially adaptive devices in which there's a lot of moving parts and maybe computer devices. You have to have people who can fix these things when they have problems, and they often have problems. There needs to be follow-up. You need support groups for people who do have different abilities, and it can help them to use the devices with more confidence. And again, refresher training may be necessary. So I talked a little bit about, so here is my bathing device. I can't bend down. I've had a total hip. I'm not allowed to bend past 90 degrees, but I want to be able to wash my feet. And so I was being discharged from the hospital. I've been given one of these. Well, out of 100 people who've been given one of these in the situation, we've got 30 people within the first 2 months who aren't using these devices. And that's still well within the period where we don't want them bending past 90 degrees because we don't want this hip to pop out. That's a problem. So why aren't they using this device, okay? So some maybe used it a little bit but found it awkward. So have we given the person the right device? We, again, have to ask this question about suitability and why they're never using it. 13% never use the device. This looks like this should be an easy. This looks like it should be a no-brainer, right? Now we got something that's a little bit more high-tech. This is called the SaboFlex. This is used for people who've had a stroke. And one of the problems with a lot of people who have a stroke is that they can close their hand, and then what happens is we call it spasticity. The tone and the muscle turns on and doesn't turn off. It's like having a Charlie horse. It doesn't hurt as bad as a Charlie horse, I hear. But they can't open their hand. If they try, and they really try, it only makes the situation worse. So this is a device that was designed to help. And you can see here that there's springs that are attached to help open the thumb, and there's springs here to help open the fingers. It can actually help strengthen those finger flexors a little bit, too. So the goal is to have this on, and you learn to grab, and then you release, and the springs help you to do this. Take a look at the price. That's a lot of money for a device that actually hasn't been proven to work. I looked, Alan. Alan's laughing because this device is a pet peeve of mine. A lot of people have been talked into getting this device, and there is no data out there that shows that this device works and actually helps people when they're not wearing the device to actually be able to open their hand afterwards. There is no data out there. And the worse than that is this device. Think about this. You got a finger that's doing this. You've got one hand to put this device on. You got this wrist piece. That looks easy. But then you got this other piece, and your hands and your wrist is also like this. But you got to get your hand up like this, and you got to get your fingers in it like this. How easy do you think that is for an individual to put that on by themselves? Just about impossible. We have one guy. I've met one person in my entire time of knowing people who've had strokes who has one of these devices that can do this by themselves. Just one. So again, access to rehabilitation equipment and services is also a problem. So we have people out there in the community who aren't getting what they need. And this is there's more recent data too, and it's the same, so I didn't update it necessarily. But 30% of people were unable to get the equipment that they need. I talked to people on the phone at the MS Society when I was talking to people who weren't able to get to a meeting, and we had people who were falling out of their wheelchairs, and they obviously needed better seating systems, and yet they weren't getting prescribed those seating systems, and that's pretty terrible. So just because we have the devices available doesn't mean they're getting to the end user as we would like them to. So how does this relate to you and product development? So, again, it's not about the product, it's about the individual. And we have to involve all the stakeholders when you're designing a device. You want to talk to the end users, of course, but you also want to talk to the rehabilitation team and the therapists when you're designing devices. It's also good to talk to family members and caregivers who might have to help with those devices at home. And it's also important to know what also exists out there in the market, which is really an important reason to talk to therapists. Oftentimes, I've met with other teams for this course where they'll come up and say, I've got a great idea. We're going to do X, Y, and Z for the project. And I say, you know, that's good. That's a starting point, but it already exists. Can you build from that? Okay. So we know what's out there. There are a lot of links on the website that for my lecture that go to a lot of the websites for the different ability products, you know, Sammons Preston, AlleyMed. There's lots of online catalogs now with lots of different equipment that's out there. And also keep in mind when you're designing, again, we talk about price. Price is really, really important. You want that person to be able to get that really neat device. But if you make that price, you know, if you make that device so that nobody can afford it and that insurance companies don't want to pay for it, then we've got a kind of a poor orphan device, and that's not a good thing either for you. So I would say keep it simple if you can. And again, yeah, know what's out there already on the market. And a couple other resources if you're interested. Looking at this, this is about using involving end users in technology development. That might be of interest to you, that article. And again, about factors that predict who and will and who won't use devices that are out there. And this is an interesting one. And again, we talk about education, and that's on there. Pricing's on there. Where people live is on there. Gender's on there. Age is on there. Matter of fact, being over 80 is a degree, has a high degree of not using these devices, which was interesting. And again, here's Able Data is interesting. Again, if you're looking for a general source, this has a lot of different things. It's not from just, it doesn't sell. It just has a lot of different rehabilitation products on it, but it also has ones that are discontinued. So know that it's discontinued and think about why it might be discontinued if you see something that might fit in with your project. Okay. And Sunrise is for wheelchairs, and AlleyMed's kind of a general overall category. And if we have time afterwards, you're welcome to come up. I brought a lot of different rehabilitation little devices that we can play around with and show and see, and you can touch and try, okay? Now, what I like is Alan and Sashiko, if you would come up and take a seat. I would like to have the, we're going to do a little Q&A with Alan and Shashiko, both who have had a stroke, and we want to talk to them a little bit as an end user about their experience with adaptive devices. And I'll try to make them more yes or no questions, Alan. You want to come up in front of the classroom? Yeah? Okay. Alan, meet Sashiko. Sashiko,
yes.
Meet Alan. And as you can see, it's not a one-size-fits-all when it comes to stroke. Here we have Alan, who has aphasia problems. You noticed that he has difficulty finding words, but he can think them. He knows what he wants to say, and it's really... But he can't find the words.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. You know what you're thinking,
yeah.
But you just can't find the words. Yeah. And but he gets around independently. He drives a car. He doesn't have full use of his hand or arm. This hand, he is what we call right hemiplegic. And you can see here what we call this finger tone that I was talking about. It's not bad right now, which is great.
Yeah.
I can actually straighten him out.
Yeah.
Sometimes finger tone gets so bad that you can't straighten a person's finger out. It will be actually in their palm.
Yeah.
We sometimes have to give injections of something to deaden the muscle when it gets that bad. Sachiko has got a very,
right side hemiplegic.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, and but Sashiko has better use of her elbow and her shoulder, and she's worked on it very hard, I know. She was involved in research that we were doing at the VA where we were using robotics, actually, to help improve motion and shoulder and elbow following stroke, and that was quite a bit of fun. Yeah, Alan also,
yeah.
It makes it very difficult. In fact, that the studies that have been done on primates where they went and cut the sensory nerves but kept intact the motor nerves, the animals quit using their hand entirely, even though they were motorily intact. If you don't have that sensation to give you feedback, it's very, very difficult to move your arm. So the fact that either of them has any movement is a testament to them working very hard. But both of them were in the hospital for quite some time, you know, after their stroke. Typically nowadays, though, you know how long somebody stays in the hospital after a stroke? You can't answer. Want to guess? That's maybe acute, but in the rehabilitation setting, a little bit longer, about 2 weeks total. So all of a sudden, you've got your life changed. Boom. Overnight, you can't use the side of your body. And you've got 2 weeks to figure it all out in the hospital, and then we're sending you, hopefully, home rather than to a nursing home. Maybe home with assisted living. Yeah, and both of these people have a lot of support in the house, and that makes a really big difference. Now, Alan, did you get given products when you were discharged from the hospital, rehabilitation devices that you didn't end up using?
Yeah.
And how about you, Sashiko?
Okay, and brace, AFO. Yeah. Similar to this, but that was the best brace I had.
Okay. Were you given a bath bench? Did you need a bath bench?
No, I didn't.
Okay. Now, were you given a bath bench?
No.
No. Did you need a bath bench?
Yes. Yeah. Okay.
I did. I think did I use it?
It's so long ago. That's a good thing. So, and I know that both of these people here have things that they wish they had been given. Go ahead.
The question was, can you define the difference of engagement between the PT and OT during that recovery time?
They're both introduced at about the same time. Because we kind of deal in different bailiwicks in terms of acute rehabilitation of a stroke. The goal of a PT is balance, could be sitting balance, is standing balance, and walking, or use of the wheelchair and getting the correct wheelchair prescription. Sometimes OTs will do wheelchair prescription, depends on the hospital setting. And the other thing but we mainly deal with trying to get that arm moving again. So you probably, both of you guys were given range of motion exercises?
Yeah.
Yep. And we do that in so order that you can't, if you start developing movement back, and you've got a limb that's stuck down to the side because you never moved it, that's not really good. So we want people to keep ranging. The other reason that we want to keep people ranging is that when you have to get dressed adaptively and you only have one hand, you have to have fairly good range of motion of that affected limb in order to be able to get dressed, in order to put their arm into the sleeve of your jacket. That's tough, right, guys?
And then zip up?
Yeah. No. You can do it. You've been working hard since I last saw you on your hand. So we work with dressing. We work with the toileting. We work with the showering, all of those things. So they all started about the same time. As I said, that's a lot of information to go through in a very, very short period of time. As I said, people tend to forget, you know, if you're lucky, your insurance will provide you with some home follow-up. Did you get any? No.
I think so. No.
Did you get any home follow-up, Ellen? Did a PT or an OT come to your house?
No. Oh,
one time?
For
the evaluation?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, you're lucky that they came to your house for the evaluation. They're pretty good about that at VA, too. It's better for me to go into somebody's house to see how they're set up and figure out what equipment they need and then for me to have even a family member tell me what is needed and how the house is set up. You really make some different choices in what kind of equipment you get. You know, there are a lot of different bath benches out there, and it really depends on what your bathtub and how your bathing situation is set up if you need one.
I have another challenging thing, my height and weight. So regular size didn't fit me.
Oh.
And children's sizes, I don't know if I could. Maybe better, but not many children's stuff.
Yeah. Again, it's not a one size fits all, guys, when you're designing product.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, on your wish list, you want to give one thing that's on your wish list of about which you wish could be developed that you haven't seen?
Yes. Actually, two.
Two?
The closest one is nail clipper.
Oh, yes.
I'll show you my nail clipper over there, and you'll see if it works. But I bet not. She has some very specific ideas of how she would like that nail clipper to work that are different than what's out there.
Both hands to coordinate.
Yeah.
You have one to operate, one to stay here, and lift up, and then stay at place. But I don't have any control, and we'll keep moving.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I have to go this way, that way.
Oh, yes.
Pushing that way. Oh, no.
I have two.
Oh, you put it in your teeth?
Yes, and then.
Kind of like biting your fingernails with a device.
Yes.
Yeah.
So.
Then you could hold. Then you could hold it.
You can't do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Alan, what would you want? Anything you can think of off the top of your head? I know one. I had actually, I don't know if it got on the list of things to do. One of the things that's really difficult for people who, after their stroke, is to get aerobic exercise because they can't walk fast. You can walk fast, but a lot of them can't. And so you think, oh, okay, maybe an exercycling, right? Except the problem is that once they hit bottom dead center in the stroke cycle, their foot gets stuck. And they can't pull it back up. And then their foot, and then the tone happens in their foot. And they get all this extensor tone, and their foot comes straight off the pedal.
It could be a problem with bicycling, too.
It could. And we could. And Alan bikes. He doesn't. You don't have that problem in your recumbent bike,
yeah.
But you do on the exercise bike.
Oh.
Yes, we got pictures of you doing that.
So I have. So I gave the back to someone else for the
really?
For the stationary back.
Oh,
but,
right.
But then I 1 or 2 days I ride the tricycle.
Oh, you ride the tricycle. And Alan also swims a bit for exercise. But the is an exception to the rule. So these are all problems that you have to deal with. Well, we were talking about, we had one time talked about a different foot pedal device for the exercise bike that he ended up having, the stationary exercise bike that he ended up getting rid of. But he has a treadmill in the home that he uses. But that was one thing that we had come up with.
I should
10 years ago, but then I lost this.
Yeah.
So,
oh, you're talking about your hunting?
Yeah,
yes.
Yes. Yes,
he has a really lovely gun collection, and he was an avid hunter. And there are some devices out there. Actually, you can do it if you're willing to do it with no hands. But he wants to be able to do it. He wants to be able to shoot one-handed.
So,
and there's no really good devices out there for that.
Yes.
Yeah, so we can think about that. So, you know, everybody has something, whether it's a leisure thing or an ADL thing, that their needs haven't necessarily been met. And that's the point of this, is to talk to them, to understand that, again, it's not a one-size-fits-all. We can't necessarily give equipment based upon a diagnosis. Oh, you got your this is a functional electrical stimulation unit that helps him to bring his toe up during the swing phase of walking. So it has a little accelerometer in it. So as he swings through, the FES, the functional electrical stimulation, stimulates the muscles of what we call the tibialis anterior, the muscles that bring the toe up, and allows him to bring the toe up. And
VA.
And VA paid for it.
Yes.
And it works.
$5,000
if he had to pay for it himself. $5,000.
So
there's great stuff. If you look on Bioness and you look on these devices and you look on electrical AFOs, there's all these things that say, wow, it makes my life great, but not everybody can afford it. Right.
So, and then I.
Did you bring a couple more things,
well,
Alan? While you get your things, Sachiko, do you want to say anything else about your assistive devices?
My husband is very assistive.
Yes, he is. Yeah, and that's a big difference for people. This is on Able Data. This is something that Alan has in his car. It's a really great device. I've seen it. It's a little bit heavy to bring it. We brought it for one class, and I think I'm glad he didn't try to bring it today.
No.
This is a portable left foot accelerator. And so it's a platform. So he drives, of course, because he doesn't have that use of his right foot. He can't use the accelerator. So he has a little pedal. And this little platform has a linkage between the accelerator and a left foot pedal and allows him to use that left foot accelerator. And the great thing is that he can switch this out. So when he travels, and Alan travels a lot, he's able to take this and put this into a rental car. So if you want to pass this around just quickly, you can kind of take a look-see.
I'll have a link to it on the course website.
Yeah. So it's a really neat device. I think that's about it. If you have any more questions, come see me after class, and you can go look at all the equipment. Thanks.
Right. Please come down and take a look at the equipment.
Thank Debbie. Great.
And thank Alan and Sachiko as well. Thank you.
Thank you.